Hello and welcome to the next episode of our podcast on negotiation. And this time with a great and valued colleague of mine, Kjeld Jensen. Kjeld, great to have you with us.
Thank you for having me.
Kjeld is a prolific author, seasoned negotiation coach and trainer, someone who has trained thousands or 35,000, I think I read in your new book, individuals in how to become a better negotiation. And if there's anyone who understands this topic, then it's definitely Kjeld. Kjeld, let me start with a very difficult question. Since you've dealt with greatness, since you've helped so many people become better at the negotiating table, I've been wondering, how would you characterize those who tend to do better than others? So how would you characterize mastery? What does it take to become a great negotiator?
Yeah, that's a tough question, really, Remy. And you want to start with this one, but okay.
No time for warm-up. Yes, let's start with a difficult one.
This is the final in the Olympics. We're going straight to it. Yes, I'm not sure I have the recipe for what is a great negotiator, because let me take a step back. It's down to how you define a great negotiator. I may define a great negotiator differently than somebody else, because it's really about your viewpoint on negotiation. Some people believe in positional negotiation. Some people believe more in collaborative negotiations. And if you're a strong believer in positional negotiation, you would probably identify a great negotiator very differently than I do, who is a strong believer in collaborative negotiation. Now, to be a great negotiator, you need to deal with both. And for those, I'm pretty sure all our viewers today know the difference. But positional negotiation is basically not focused on interest, but just focusing on win, and sometimes winning at the expense of the counterpart, where a collaborative negotiator obviously is focused on trying to get the best possible outcome for both parties. I purposely don't use the term win-win because that's been abused so much. And often I find clients saying, oh, we enter collaborative negotiation and win-win. And all they really want to is win at the expense of the counterpart. So win-win just means more win-win-win for us. So anyway, it's going to be a long answer. I tried to make it short. So what I would say, Remy, is a great negotiator is actually somebody who's consciously conscious or unconsciously conscious. That means they have studied it. They may have studied the science of negotiation so much, so they forgot some parts of it. And they probably have forgotten more than some other people have ever learned about negotiation. So you have studied negotiation. And the reason I am emphasizing this is because so many studies I've dived into lately have shocked me. A very recent one I saw said that 55%, I repeat, 55% of professional contract managers in the world have never, ever received any formal training in negotiation. And wow. When I see numbers like that, I get shocked. And it's not about coming to us to get training. It's about getting training. They can come to you. They can come to 100 of our colleagues. I don't really care. It's about getting the training. And I think, unfortunately, there's so many people out there who are unconsciously incompetent. They don't know. They actually can't negotiate. They think that negotiation is just something we do. Because we are watching our colleagues doing it, and we've been doing it for 13 years, and then we have all the experience in the year, but not in the world. But unfortunately, Remy, I've seen so many negotiators who claim they have 13 years of experience, and in reality, they have one. They've just copied 13 times, right? So it's a science. It's a topic. It's an art that you need to study, and you can do it continuously. So even if you have taken a workshop or read a number of books 5-10 years ago, you need to get back on the horse, because now there's new topics coming up. Now we're talking AI in negotiation. We're talking about different aspects. We're talking about supply chain issues. I mean, the world is changing more than ever. So, So back to your question, what is a great negotiator? Somebody who is consciously conscious about the science of negotiation. That was probably a terrible answer. I apologize.
So I think conscious competence is an extremely important topic with it. But would you tie greatness in negotiation to the results?
It depends. I know it's a very political answer, but it depends what it is you want to achieve. Do you want to achieve great result for yourself at the expense of the counterpart? Are you thinking short term or long term? Now, I'm a commercial negotiator, so don't call me if there's a hostage situation, just like I don't think you should call a hostage negotiator if you're sitting in a commercial negotiation. The reason I'm saying that is a commercial negotiation is about two things and two things only: to identify create value and distribute value. That's the only reason two companies ever negotiated with each other, to create value, distribute value. So in order to understand that, you need to, unfortunately, I know a lot of people hate when I'm saying that, you need to know math as well, because it's about numbers. It's about, in a collaborative negotiation, I'm in the book writing about the concept Necroeconomics, that is an award-winning mathematical model I created that is basically very simple. It identifies the asymmetric value between your cost and my value and my cost and your value.
Right.
And we have, through studies, identified that up to 42% in negotiation are often lost. That means the parties don't identify, capitalize, and utilize that value. And back to your question, a great negotiator are able to capitalize and capture that value, and then split that value with the counterpart somehow. And that's often more difficult than immediately sounds like. So it's really about understanding what is it you want to do in negotiation. Another thing I mentioned in the book, Remi, is really that we perceive negotiation differently. So I remember last time I was a guest here at your podcast, we also talked about we have to negotiate before we negotiate. And that is a thing I mentioned in the book as well, because we see negotiation differently. You perhaps see negotiation as playing chess, and I see it like playing poker. And then we negotiate differently. So again, you know, we could actually spend 4 hours just on what is a great negotiator, because there's so many layers to it. But it really, back to what I said, is really about being conscious, competent, and retraining yourself all the time to know what is it that I don't know and what is it that I do know.
Great. And I think in this process, it's very important to acquire knowledge, right? And I know that you're about to publish a new book called The Elements of Negotiation.
Yes.
So let's switch our attention to your book. What inspired you to write that book? Why Elements of Negotiation? I know it's ambiguous, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep, it is. Again, long story, very short. The last couple of books I published, especially the last one last year, Negotiation Essential, was a little bit more holistic, talking about strategy choices, talking about value, talking about organizational implementation. And it's actually been a long time since I published the book on tools. And I was thinking, I did a book contract with Wiley for two books. One's being released now, August 27th, and another one next year. And I was thinking, I think I need to write a book about tools, because, to be honest, not sounding arrogant, but I've for many years been thinking about, there's too many books out there just preaching tools. You know, God, there's so many. You can just pick any book and it will talk tools from page one to page 280. But I was thinking, I'm going to do something quite ambitious. I'm trying to gather all the tools in one book. Everything that I can possibly imagine is important for the professional negotiator. And I ended up with 103. You may say, well, you forgot this one, and I appreciate that, and I possibly have forgotten one or two or three or five or perhaps even 10, but those were the 103 elements I could come up with. So I think you're okay if you just start using 50 or 60 or 70 of those. You're going to be way more successful in your negotiations than if you don't. So 103, that was the maximum capacity I had to come up with. So,
a coincidence, it's exactly the number of, conventional elements in the periodic system, right?
Yes, it's just matched somehow. It was remarkable. I mean, if we had 104, I had to squeeze something more in there, but we ended up at 103. So yes.
Actually, there are some elements which are not stable enough to be included in the periodic system, but there is also Unin Pentium and Unin Hexium, which is 105, 106, right, and probably even more. But right. Kelt, if you want to extend the book, there is still room for it. There would be still room for it by using this analogy. But I know that I've had a pleasure to read parts of the book, not the entire book. So thank you for sharing a copy with me prior to our chat. And I know that these tools do not come out of the blue. Could you maybe share a few words about how you collected the data, how you collect the material for, categorizing and classifying these 103 tactics?
Right. Yeah, that was actually a bigger job than I thought it was when I got started. I saw a funny sign the other day saying, We didn't start this because we thought it would be easy, but it turned out to be really hard. and that was basically what I encountered as well. Now, let me just once again take a step back. I think, and now I'm provoking some people, I think there's too many opinions in the science of negotiation. People are voicing their opinions, their belief, their experience, and perhaps they're right. But in some cases, they're wrong. I am in the academic world, just like you, am I? So I like research. I like to document the outcome. I like to have peer-reviewed papers, even though it's a nightmare writing it and getting through the process. But I like to have some critical eyes on the work I do. That's also why I publish with recognized publishers, because there's editors and filters and different layers you have to go through to have your publication published. You just can't claim stuff. So what I have aimed to do in this book is only share tools, strategy, tactics, philosophies, approaches that is proven through science. So it's something that has been documented. It's not opinions. It's not what I feel. I even have feelings about some of the items, some of the elements that I personally disagree with, but it's still scientifically proven that that's the way it is. So that's the way it is. So all the elements have been inspired by my work with 35,000 people since 1998. And we have carefully since 1998 collected and summarized the experience of negotiators. So this is both negotiation in laboratories with simulations and real life negotiations with clients. So it's basically know-how and experience combined with academic research that ended up in 103 elements. So it sounded, when I talk about it, it was a little bit of lucky punch. It wasn't. It's actually the labor, the result of very hard labor gathering all this data.
That sounds super exciting, and this is how it reads, at least almost halfway through, which I've gone. I hope the other half is similarly good. I've recently, speaking about opinion, a quick anecdote. I recently came across a person who commented extensively on the research that we did, which basically went along the following lines. I appreciate your research, but I disagree with it. Mm-hmm. I'm sure, Kelt, you've come across opinions that attempt to refute science based on a gut feeling, yes, or mm-hmm. based on what we believe is true in terms of our personal experience. Eh? Mm-hmm. I love the approach that you demonstrated in the book, because it relies more on data gathering and data collection, which is at the heart of scientific method. Yes, which means only better science can refute science, not an opinion. Right, regardless of how many instances we've gathered in so-called the real life, yes, that go against science. Only better science can refute science. So I hope there are not that. I hope you guys will. I'm sure you've or have you account have you experienced any individuals who have doubted your tactics or your recommendations because at some point they experienced something to the contrary?
Absolutely. Part of what I'm preaching is slightly provoking to my audience, because my take on negotiation is somewhat different than what is perceived by many people. I have a tendency to embrace the philosophy about transparency, about trust, about the focus on truly sharing. And that is provoking to some people that are claiming that is naive, it's not possible. Negotiation is a hostage negotiation where we basically have to hide our cards and you know, manipulate the counterpart. And yes, some negotiations are like that, for instance, hostage negotiations. But a commercial negotiation between two parties that want to work together long term is not a hostage negotiation. So right. You have to have a different take, a different approach on that. I would, back to what you said, Remy, I completely agree with everything you said. And I would encourage anybody, if you have better data, better research, that would shoot down some of my philosophies, I'm happy, because that will just make the global understanding of negotiation even better. But I would also encourage somebody to come with real data instead of just voicing opinions, because opinions is just opinions. Opinions is not research. But I'm sure, without any doubt, Remy, that some of my conclusions could be shut down by different research, like it is with the research. So, and I'm very open to that. I'm always willing to change my conclusion if there's a conclusion that proves that mine is wrong.
I remember, yes, I couldn't agree more. I remember in a commercial environment, I had a nice conversation with a colleague of mine, and who said, "Well, if your opinion is contrary to mine, well, let's go with mine." But anyway, let's move on and tackle some of the aspects of the elements of negotiation. Was there anything from those 35,000 negotiators that you've observed and the data that you've collected and analyzed, anything that surprised you? You've been in this business for many, many years, right? So probably many things you already knew back then.
Right.
Was there anything that was counterintuitive, surprising? Anything that pops up in your mind when we mention it?
Yeah, it's a wonderful question. I would actually say, still to this day, the importance of trust keeps surprising me. And I've even been focused on trust in so many years, but I'm still almost every single day surprised about what impact trust has in negotiation. I was just doing a podcast this morning about relational contracting, which is actually a term that was originated all the way back in the 60s, but it's not really catching on before now, where you have some major corporations, for instance, in energy here in the US, ConocoPhillips and others, who actually start to embrace that and say, "Hey, should we try and do relational contracting with our suppliers instead of just doing what we've always done?" And a crucial part to be successful in relational contracting is trust. And I recently finished a doctorate where I proved and could put a value on trust as well. And the value is 28%, to be exact. So we could actually measure that if we have a high level of trust, whatever that might be, that can be capitalized with a value of 28% in a contract negotiation compared to a negotiation with no one with low or no trust. So I keep surprising myself, even though I'm preaching it every day, the impact of trust and how difficult it is to generate and have trust in negotiation. Because for whatever reason, Remy, it seems that most negotiators in this world meet up in a conference room and start with distrust. They don't trust the counterpart.
Which is normal, right? I mean, why should we trust someone we meet for the first time?
Absolutely. I agree with that. However, though, I agree with that. But we're also very different. Some people start with extreme low trust and other people start with a higher level of trust. You know?
Correct.
Some people would call the people with a high level of trust naive, and some people will call the other ones very cynical, right? So it varies again from individual to individual. However, I agree with you, and I'm not saying and preaching we should be naive either, because there are some people you're going to meet, obviously, who doesn't have the best intention and will try and cheat you. So you obviously have to pick your partners carefully. Having said that, what I'm always asking my students and clients is that when you was raised by your parents, did your parents tell you that you should not trust anybody? That you should hide your cards, that you should send out a smoke screen, and you should bluff and cheat to every stranger you meet on your way? And then people are sitting there quietly and some laugh a little bit. And then I say, I'm pretty sure, I don't know your parents, but I'm pretty sure that was not how you were raised. So why on earth is it the second we step into negotiation, that's how many negotiators behave? You know, sending out a smoke screen, holding the cards tight to our bodies, using different kind of tactics and playing a game. And to me, negotiation is so simple, Remy. It's really sitting down and collaborating. It's not you against me. It's not the wording versus. It's actually us working together. So I think I mentioned in the book, I often recommend my students and clients to open up negotiation by saying, "Remy, I'm here today to help you reduce your cost, liabilities, and risk while helping you improving your profit. Are you interested in me doing that?" Now you're in real life. If this was real life, you would be quiet for a little bit, but then you're going to say, "Yes, obviously." And then I'm saying, "Great, happy to hear that, Remy. And I do see your role today is helping me reducing my cost, risk, and liabilities and help me improve my profit. And if we can agree with that, that is our assignment. That is what we have in front of us. Because we want to become more successful, both of you financially. And that's what I'm trying to, through my work, make everybody understand that that true negotiation is about a change of a mindset, because we have really negotiated the same way since 1776. So in 2024, we use the same methods, the same tools. We haven't really advanced a lot. So we need to change how we perceive negotiation. And this is really important.
Yes, I couldn't agree more. So let's move on. So you've collected the data, right? So you've observed thousands of negotiators in action and saw the impact that their behavior had on the results. How did you extract these elements, these 103 elements from this data, right? It's not only tactics. I've already seen in the book that it's part of them are tactics, part of them is mindset, philosophy, approaches, right? So it's a little bit more than just tactics. But how did you transition from data collection to the final product, which is described in the book?
Yes, that's a wonderful question. First and foremost, I'm thinking, how do we divide it into groups? Because exactly as you said, tactics is one thing. And by the way, I'm actually not a strong believer in tactics, back to what we talked about before, but research shows that tactics is something that for some negotiators is important. I would normally not promote a lot of the tactics that I write about in the book, but it's still important to understand some of those. So it's divided into fundamental tactics, even behavioral economics and body language. Right. So I basically broke the studies down in all the, I would say, bases or chapters that is required for the complete negotiator. And this is an extremely ambitious project, as I said earlier, because the book is only 310 pages or something like that. So it is really a lot that we are trying to squeeze into to one book. So the data was basically concluding, what is it, back to your original question, what is it that make a great negotiator? And then just try to break that down into the different grouping, you know, tactics, tools, body language, fundamentals. And a funny part, let me just share that. A funny part in the fundamentals, and this sounds weird for some, that was we found that great negotiators like to negotiate. I know it sounds really simple, right? But I think we can all agree that human beings that truly like to do something are better at it than those who don't like to do something and are doing it, right?
Makes sense.
So, yeah, it makes sense. But you know, it was a little bit surprising still that when you ask negotiators, the ones who are typically performing better said, I do truly enjoy to negotiate. It's great fun. I hate to sit in front of my computer and do the spreadsheet, but when I'm sitting out there negotiating with a counterpart, that's really fun because that's where I can test the philosophies, right? And then I meet other people who are saying, do you know what? I'm having a negotiation on Tuesday, but I'm not looking forward to it because the counterpart might say no and it could turn into a conflict. And I don't really like that. I would rather sit here in front of my computer and just do everything online. And we could clearly see through our studies that those negotiators who like to negotiate outperforms the one who don't negotiate. So we can ask our viewers right now, do you actually like to negotiate? And if you like to negotiate, congratulations, you probably have the potential to be a great negotiator if you're not already. And if you honestly answer to yourself, I truly dislike to negotiate, stop doing it. I can't say anything else. You shouldn't do it. You could be a great support for the head of the negotiation in your team. You could be a great supporter, great at preparation, but you should not be sitting there heading a negotiation. That will just cost your organization a fortune.
That makes a lot of sense. We can deliver greatness if we enjoy what we're doing, right? Professionalism without fun seems like a torture, right?
You know, in our pre-conversation, Remy, before we went live today, we're talking Olympics. And you know, when you are watching track, right, I'm pretty sure that the guy or the woman who is running 100 and 200 meters, I'm pretty sure they're there because they enjoy it. If they hated what they were doing, they would not qualify to the Olympics and they would definitely not win the gold medal. So you have to like what you do.
I tend to agree. Yes, it's thousands of miles every year, right, or kilometers that they have to run, and imagine, and I don't know, 10,000 of hours of training, and imagine not liking, not enjoying it. It's like turning life into misery. Yeah, it's the best recipe for that. But coming back to the book, let's assume that different question. I was thinking while going through your book, I was thinking about feeding your book into an AI model in order to create the best negotiator, not human, machine on Earth. What do you think about this idea?
There's actually a gentleman out there who have used my last book from last year, Negotiation Essential, and he did that. He's an engineer, technical engineer somehow, and he took the concept of the book and created a negotiation assessment. I think you can actually gain access to it for free on ChatGPT. And I tried it out because he linked me and said, I've used your book and the content and created this. And I thought it was pretty good. He'd done a really good job. It worked out pretty well. You could basically get an assessment of your competence as a negotiator. My short answer would be yes. I haven't tried it myself. I haven't taken these 103 elements and put them into AI and have AI generate the perfect model. But I think it's a great question, Remy, and perhaps it's something we should test out, because I'm sure that AI could definitely come up with if not the perfect negotiator, a very competent negotiator based on that knowledge.
Mm-hmm. So now imagine someone has read your book and knows all these 103 elements. Obviously, it's very hard to turn this knowledge into a skill or use this knowledge to develop their skills or to improve their skills. Yeah? Mm-hmm. What else would you recommend, or how would you recommend, let's say, the transition from consciously incompetent to being consciously competent after having read your book?
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm doing a book tour right now, so I'm being interviewed with lots of media, and I'm getting this question from a lot of journalists. So why should people buy your book? And I love to tease them. So my answer is often, well, you shouldn't. And then they get really confused because they're expecting that I'm coming up with a huge pitch on why to buy the book. But I'm saying you should not only buy my books. It's really important that you study different philosophies in negotiation. You should also study philosophies that disagree with my philosophy, or I disagree with that philosophy. So you should not only buy my book and read about negotiation. You should buy 3, 4, 5, 6 different books from different authors if you really want to be a competent negotiator.
Kel, just a sec. May I interrupt you for a sec? Yes.
Sure.
If your 103 elements are science-based and someone's elements, right, or approaches, tactics, and whatever disagree with them, then ultimately you would be recommending reading something that doesn't really hold true.
Absolutely. But we also have to study the counterpart. And that means that you will meet people who don't believe in the research, don't believe in the data, don't agree with what I'm saying. And you have to understand where their viewpoint is coming from. I think in general, now we become a little bit more holistic, but I think one of the problems we have in the world right now is that we are not very good at listening to the counterpart in general. Understanding the counterpart and showing empathy to the counterpart. So we have to study the counterpart. We have to figure out where's their beliefs coming from. Why are they disagreeing with our approach to negotiation and collaboration? So we have to study other philosophies than just this one. Even though this is research-based, we have to study something that could be research-based as well. It could be opinion-based. So we have to prepare for other stuff. And by the way, there's I could recommend several other great books out there that are research-based as well, from great authors that have really done a tremendous amount of solid work. And there's books out there that is not research-based, but is actually accidentally proving research work as well. So I would definitely recommend reading other books as well, besides just this one, in order to be a great negotiator. There's a very successful book out now. I'm not going to mention any name, bestseller on Amazon and all the other lists. And I meet way too many people that said, I bought that book, I read it, it's great, I'm a great negotiator right now. And every time I'm hearing that, I'm almost sitting there crying. Oh my God, you know, so you think you should read that one book and now you know how to negotiate. Now, come back when you've been reading 10 books on negotiation. And then, by the way, when you're able to criticize that first book and are able to conclude what is not correct in that book, then we can talk. So I'm not promoting in any possible way you should only read one book. I'm sure when you're lecturing at university, Remy, you're not only recommending one book either. You know, you recommend students to read a number of different books, right? So it's I actually forgot your question now. I'm basically just telling people not to buy my book right now.
You're telling them not to buy the book and miss out on all the fun. Yes. No, the question was, what else do we need in addition to knowledge to become consciously competent?
Yes, that's a great question, very important one. Besides reading, I normally say you can't learn to swim by reading a book. Right. I have been saying that for years. And what I mean by that is, yeah, great, you can sit here and read this book. You can gain a lot of theoretical knowledge, but it needs to be implemented in the real world. So one thing I've developed is a workbook that you get for free when you pre-order this book. You can just go to the landing page of the book or Wiley or whatever. And that is a book. The workbook is just full of exercises that actually complements the theory in the actual book. So that's one thing you can do where you can start practicing. You can list variables, something that is negotiable. You can make an assessment of yourself. How are you as a negotiator? You can practice questions. There's a bunch of stuff you can do with that. The next thing you have to do is actually try stuff out. And I wouldn't do it immediately in the reality, but I would run simulations. And you know, when we talk about preparation, just back to the Olympics, I was just sitting with my wife the other day and watching the 100 meter semifinals, right? And, it takes them less than 10 seconds to run 100 meters. And I don't know if you ever thought about that, Remy, but that is really fast. That is like really, really fast. If you and I tried to do that right now, we would be embarrassing ourselves. We would not even get close. And think about these athletes here. They are every fourth year coming to a tournament to run for less than 10 seconds. You know, if you think about it, that is crazy, because back to what you said before, how many thousands of hours have they been practicing to compete for 10 seconds, right? That gives you something of an understanding of the importance of preparation. And I'm just saying that because so many negotiators I meet are heading out next week to $1 million contract negotiation, or $100 million contract negotiation, and the preparation is close to nothing. Because we wing it, you know. Let's talk about on the way there how we do it. Let's set the roles and ask the questions and whatever. And they haven't really prepared. So one thing that we need to do besides reading a book like this is actually sitting down and then run simulations before we go out to a real life negotiation. We have to sit down with our colleagues and run a simulation how we're going to do this negotiation next week. And even better than that, and I'm doing that quite often and recommend it to my clients, invite your counterpart. I call it your counterpart right now. We could also call it our partner, but invite your counterpart into a simulation before the real negotiation with that same counterpart. We have repeatedly done that with huge success. So the two parties that are going to negotiate real life on Tuesday next week are today just running a simulation to practice how do we negotiate with each other. And I can promise you, Remy, every single time they gained a way better financial result for both of them just by implementing this small exercise. So, you know, it's prep work, simulation, practice.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. The transition from knowledge to skill development leads through repetitions, dear audience. I think we got a question from the audience, but knowledge and repetitions, it's not everything. You still need to regularly assess your skills, and that's typically very difficult, except if you guys join our negotiation competitions. Something more about it later. So Mariana is asking, how I would like to read a book that teaches the latest good practices. What do you recommend besides your book? Besides your book, well, first of all, read Kel's book, although he doesn't want you to. But I'm sure there are a couple of other books that Kel would recommend. What are they?
No, I would actually, as you just said, Remy, I would actually recommend negotiation competitions. I see more of them popping up everywhere. You are running a couple of great ones. And for everybody, whether you are student or professionals, it is a wonderful, wonderful opportunity to test yourself. I have a great honor of being a judge on a few negotiation competitions around the world. And I think I enjoyed even more than the people participating. And it's very educational for me as well. And what is really educational is not so much just grading the actual performance, but giving the feedback. Because that's really where students and professionals are getting something and bringing something away from that table. So if you have the opportunity and if you're a little bit competitive, I would definitely recommend joining our negotiation in any negotiation competition anywhere in the world. That's really great fun. Besides that, I actually released just a little bit late, just I think a few days ago or last week, a list of books that I would recommend to read on LinkedIn, that I would recommend to read if you want to become a better negotiator. And the fun part is that a number of the books on that list have nothing to do with negotiation. But, you know, you have to study holistically if you want to be better at something. So behavioral economics is a study area. Communication is a study area. Economics, even though a lot of people hate that, is a study area. So, you know, that different areas and different books you should definitely read. So I picked 12 books on that list. And again, a lot of people will say, well, you forgot those three. And that's absolutely true. I probably did. There's a lot of great books on there.
I'll try to add it as a comment under our podcast here, under the stream. So how shall we read the book? Right? Because, you know, thinking about the periodic table of elements, right? Mm-hmm. Do we go horizontally? Do we go vertically? Do we start with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 and then end with 103? How do you recommend reading your own, or do we pick one and practice and then take the other one and practice? What is your recommendation? How do you recommend people should read, people read your book?
I would recommend they read it like I wrote it. And that means in no particular order. The great thing about this book is you don't have to start on page one and then go through the book. You can start on page 84 because that element is relevant to you. So I would pick, I would first and foremost sit down. There's a perfect periodic table. And then I would pick the items that you immediately think is most important to you. Because you're getting into that negotiation or you feel it's an area that you can improve your competence in or for whatever reason. And then I would just read on that. And, you know, if you download the workbook as well, work in the workbook, do that work and then move on to the next element. So I would actually not recommend starting at element number one and finishing up at element 103, because we forget as human beings, so you can't remember what you've been reading if you're doing that way around. So related to a specific challenge, task, something you want to improve on, and then read up of that element in connection with that.
Hmm. So how can we, we have an important question, which refers to something which we've already discussed 3 minutes ago. Nikolai is asking, when running a simulation with a counterpart or a partner some days before the real negotiation, what case should be negotiated? A test case to learn how the other party behaves and acts, or what could be the example of such a simulation?
Great question. We usually create a simulation that not necessarily directly mirror the negotiation they're having the following week. So we create a simulation. What we do on top of that is typically we mix the team as well. So let's say you are supplier, MA, and I'm the buy side, then I would mix the two teams. So some of my colleagues would be on your team and some of your colleagues would be on my team, because suddenly we understand the counterpart way better when we're sitting doing our prep work. So that's another angle that we do. But typically in a few situations, we have actually created a kind of simulation based on the real negotiation they're getting into. But by doing that, people get a little bit confused because it becomes too real sometimes. And then they start negotiating the actual negotiation. That's not the purpose. The purpose is really just figuring out, are we negotiating like playing tennis? Are we negotiating like we're playing chess, right? So it's really an exercise on how we want to negotiate more than negotiating the content. But I love the question. It's very important that you do it right.
All right, good. So when you wrote the book, what takeaways did you envision for the readers? Yeah, so when the readers go through one way or another, through 103 elements of negotiations, what shall they take out of it, out of the reading process?
Yeah, I'm happy about that question. I think it would be very individual. I think different people will gain different things from the book. I think some people will get shocked about how many things you have to think about when you negotiate. So my attempt with the book is also to really raise a warning flag saying negotiation is easy if you know what you're doing. But if you don't know what you're doing, it's actually very complicated, like most stuff in life, right? So the book is should really serve as a kind of a manual to your improving your skills in negotiation and preparing yourself to negotiate. So I think people will gain very different things from the book besides the tools that is in it that is very easy to use in most cases and hopefully well explained. I'll leave that up to the readers. But secondly, it's really about presenting, as I said, what I see as the most important elements or the elements that you need to prepare for a negotiation. So I know it's not a very great answer, Remi, but I really think people will take very different things away from that book.
Partially as a reference book and partially as an inspiration for development of a particular aspect of the negotiation skills. Got it. You mentioned that you signed a contract with Wiley for two books. What's the other one?
Yeah, it's coming up next year, April next year. And that's a very different book again, because that it's called The Smart Negotiator. And we have analyzed a reality show. I can't release the name right now, but people can start guessing. A very famous reality show that consists of nothing but negotiations. And in that reality show, the panel claims to be the best negotiators in the world. And obviously, I couldn't leave that. You know, I just have to dive in and take a look at that. So we actually watched 100 episodes and did AI analysis of that of those episodes and broke them down. And basically, and then you can watch all those episodes on YouTube as well. So we're going to make reference to it. And then basically just describe what they did really well, what that was okay, and what was horrible. So it's basically kind of an analysis of a reality show.
That's intriguing. Some of our guests are, I see in the comments, are guessing, is it The Suits?
I can't talk about that right now. But
is it Shark Tank?
It will be published very, very soon.
All right, so guys, we have to arm ourselves with patience. And now let's talk a little bit about skill development. Right, we started our conversation with the definition of greatness, and I loved your definition in which you mentioned two main themes. One is the transition from incompetence to unconscious incompetence to conscious competence, right? And the other one was the value engineering aspect that you mentioned, right? So now let's imagine you would be interested in demonstrating that your books, your training material, your concepts are the best in the world. Okay? Would you be able to educate someone and prepare for a negotiation competition so that that person wins that competition?
Oh, that's an is that a challenge?
It is.
Well, that would be the same. It'll be the same question you should ask a coach for the athletic team at the Olympics. Could you guarantee that your athletes would win the 100 meters if you gave them the best and you claim to be the best coach in the world? Well, first and foremost, I don't claim to be the best coach in the world because there's a lot of great people out there. Could I make an impact for the team and make them do really well? Absolutely. Could they win finally? I'm pretty sure they could do very well. But there might be other very strong competitors out there. But just at the Olympic, we talked about Olympics several times already. It's also about the shaping of the day, right? What is the form factor? How are they doing right now? Are they mentally on top of it? And so there are some aspects that you can't control that is important as well. But it's a fun exercise. And, as a back to when I'm a judge in negotiation competition, we are coaching teams as well. Obviously, they have their own coach already, but we are coaching them as well. And we can definitely see that the feedback we're giving them from one round is definitely helping them into the next round. So, yes, it could be a fun exercise. Well, let's do it this way, Rema. I think you should pick Some of the known names within the world of negotiation, have them train their own team, and then we throw them into your competition, and we see which team is doing the best.
Deal. Kelt, you are, please nominate your best students, the most talented students that that have understood your concepts, that have gone through your training, and not students, I mean professionals, right? I mean in terms of participants, workshop participants.
Sure.
And if they have time, we are super happy to embrace them. We are super happy to have them with us. Guys, if you have been trained by Kelt Jensen, yes, in the past, and you believe in the concept, that the concept has made you into a better negotiators, please reach out to us, and we're gonna make the same offer also to other trainers. Yes, and let's see how many of them are comfortable with measuring the effectiveness of their training concepts. Yes, I wonder. Yeah, we have a great question from Eric. I was tempted to buy your book, but if you really don't want me to do so, are you prepared to offer someone in my lamentable position something to discourage me from purchasing? Or is this a trick where I get to the end of the book? Or is this a trick where I get to the end of the book and all is revealed to have been a master strategy to get me to buy the book all the more vehemently? Thank you either way.
No, I'm kidding. Obviously, I want people to buy the book. What I was trying to say earlier is that I'm not claiming that by buying this book, this is all you need. As I said earlier, I've recommended 12 books just recently that I think you should read to become an accomplished negotiator. And I hope my books are one of them or two of them, but there are so many other books. But no, absolutely, certainly. I think Wiley would be very angry if I'm sitting here saying, don't buy the book. I don't think you should. So no, of course, I'll be very, I'm very honored and humbled if people choose to buy my book.
So we're slowly coming to an end of our session. So let's talk a little bit about the book itself. When is the release date? How can we buy it? How can we get a hold of it? Kelt.
Sure. Yeah, August 27th, worldwide. Wiley is the publisher. So if you go to your normal book pusher, whether that might be here in the US, it's typical Amazon, Barnes & Noble, what have you. So both bookstores and online, obviously, it's available everywhere. So and Wiley's told me that it should be available and physically in stores on August 27th.
So 19 days and counting, right? August 8th. August 27th is the release date of the book. I encourage all of our listeners and viewers to give it a shot if you're interested in how Kelt dissected all the data he has collected from 35,000 of negotiators he has trained in the past into chunks of knowledge, being tactics, approaches, which are research-based, yes, and can help us become better negotiators. Please make sure you order his book, grab the book, have a look at it, practice, and join our competition if you believe you're a great negotiator.
Yeah, and I heard, Remy, that the first prize of winning your competition is 2-day all paid, 2 weeks all paid in Hawaii. Is that right?
It's a 2-day negotiation workshop to become even better, or
well,
to make your team happy at work, or to become, let's say, individually more skilled negotiator. Right. So yes, it's not necessarily on Hawaii, but if the company definitely wishes us to join them in Hawaii, we wouldn't resist.
Oh, you wouldn't. Okay. You wouldn't. Yeah. I think we should raise the flag for a negotiation conference that is happening in Vilnius, Lithuania, where both of us are speaking, Remy. It's happening on October 3rd. The organizers are doing a great job. It's actually going to be a huge conference with 500 people attending. And I'm looking forward to speaking at that conference. And I know you, Remy, is coming there together with other of our esteemed colleagues. And it's going to be one day full of just negotiation. And I know from the organizers that it's been overwhelming with the interest. So I just want to share that with everybody.
Right. That's a great point. Yes. So Vilnius, October 3rd. Yes. There's going to be quite a few really great speakers. If you guys are passionate about negotiation and you would like to find out something you might not know at this point, from really cool guys like Kelt and others. Join us in Vilnius on October 3rd.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. Kelt, it was a pleasure and honor to have you on our podcast again. Thank you so much for being with us. Guys, remember, August 27th, The Elements of Negotiation by Kelt Jensen, and October 3rd, Conference in Vilnius, and both links you guys will find in the comments. Kelt, thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me again, Remy.
Thank you.